Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As students prepare to go back to college, many wonder how they are going to pay for basic necessities, especially in expensive regions like the Bay Area. Food insecurity is now very common among U.S. college students. A survey conducted by the Hope Center for College, Community, and Justice found that half of the 670,000 students who participated struggle to buy nutritious food. The rates are higher for students of color, LGBTQ students, former foster youth, and those with a criminal record. Campus food pantries are now common, but the use of public benefit programs like SNAP remains low for college students. So what will it take to ensure that college students have access to nutritious food? Joining us to kick off the show is Vanessa Coca, Senior Research Associate at Temple University's Hope Center for College, Community, and Justice. Hi, Vanessa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. We wanted you to start off the show by telling us about the survey that you conducted and what you found. So you were able to survey a lot of students at 123 colleges across the country?
That's correct. 90 two-year colleges and 33 four-year colleges from 24 states around the U.S.
And you asked them not just about issues around hunger, but also homelessness. So what really struck you about your findings?
Yes. What I guess is most striking is that how remarkably consistent our results are, in that this is the fourth annual survey that we've done, and the rates have not changed dramatically over time. So this basically suggests that this is a pretty stable issue, in that many students are experiencing food insecurity, housing insecurity, and a surprising number of students, 17% this year from the fall of 2018, were homeless.
Wow, 17%.
That's right.
Well, can you talk more about how difficult it is for students to buy nutritious food? I mean, and it's important to really focus on nutritious food.
Absolutely, yes. So when we talk about food insecurity, we do specify that that means getting access to nutritionally adequate and safe food, and whether or not that is limited or uncertain for students. And this can mean, in terms of the questions we ask about food insecurity, we ask students about whether or not they were worried about running out of food before they could buy more, whether they could afford to eat balanced meals, and whether or not they ate less or they skipped meals because they didn't have enough more money for food. So if students ask any of these questions or additional questions like these, we find them to be insecure in terms of their access to food.
And this issue affects such a wide range of students. I mean, it as I said in the intro, we're talking about students who are especially hit hard, students of color, LGBTQ students, former foster youth, those with a criminal record. And I was reading a story, and a Harvard Graduate School of Education professor, Anthony Jack, was quoted saying that this doesn't afflict only community colleges. It also affects elite schools. He said that when Harvard, for example, closes during spring break, low-income students struggle to buy meals and endure structural inequalities that keep students in what he calls second-class positions at first-class institutions.
Right. So we do ask students attending four-year colleges. We don't have a lot of what you're labeling as elite colleges participate in our survey, but we know just these low-income students have very similar experiences across the different schools they attend. You mentioned not having access to food in between semesters or in the summer, and that goes the same for housing, right? So when students don't have access to their dorm, then a lot of them are struggling to find housing. So yes, these issues do, they show up in a variety of spaces.
And Vanessa, before we let you go, there are now food pantries on college campuses across the country, and according to reports, the use of public benefits programs like SNAP remains very low for college students. What else? I mean, I hate even asking what needs to change because we know what needs to change.
Yeah.
I mean, the college tuition is so incredibly high. The cost of housing is so incredibly high. Debt is so high. But what is at the top of your list? What changes would you like to see?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, there are quite a few students who are eligible for SNAP. We know that they're not receiving SNAP, and so schools could provide resources to get them access to SNAP benefits. Another sort of larger idea that we often talk about is expanding the National School Lunch Program to higher ed. We've had it for such a long time in the K-12 sector. There's not a compelling reason why this cannot be offered in higher ed. That would also solve some of the issues along the more complications around getting students access to SNAP.
And we're planning to do actually a show about the school lunch program, and that actually that needs to be improved because so much of that food is unhealthy.
Absolutely, yes. We do want to emphasize that we want students to have access to nutritional, nutritionally adequate food. Yes. So on top of that, something we often point out is that colleges and college leaders could be very proactive in developing partnerships with the broader community, right? So partnerships with food service vendors, partnerships with local pantries and community organizations, and even the private sector can help resolve or at least address some of these issues that students are facing.
Well, Vanessa, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That is Vanessa Coca, Senior Research Associate at Temple University's Hope Center for College, Community, and Justice. They recently completed an extensive study. They surveyed 167,000 students from 123 U.S. colleges and found that nearly half struggle to buy nutritious food. As she said, they also found 17% of these students are homeless. And we'll put up that report at yourcallradio.org. Joining us now is a panel of three guests in studio. Ruben Canedo is chair of the UC Berkeley Basic Needs Committee and co-chair of the UC-wide Food and Basic Needs Initiative to discuss hunger on college campuses. Hi, Ruben. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me here.
We're also joined by Horace Montgomery, Executive Director of Associated Students, a nonprofit-led student group at San Francisco State University. Hi, Horace. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Tatiana Ramos is assistant at the Associated Students at SF State University. Hi, Tatiana. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Well, great to have you. You know, before we start off and talk about hunger on college campuses, for those of us who maybe have been out of school for a long time and don't have children and might not have much experience with college, let's talk about how much things have changed over the last couple decades. According to Forbes, over the past 40 years, the cost for public and private institutions has nearly tripled.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So can you give us a number? What is the average cost to go to UC Berkeley these days when you factor in books and housing?
Yeah, so we're actually very fortunate to be in the state of California. I do want to start there. I think we have a really phenomenal state commitment to public higher education, where you see the three segments, community college, CSU, and UC, actively be champions for college affordability. And I think something that brings California to the forefront is the fact that there's a deep commitment to the three segments, because community college students will at some point end up in the CSU or the UC. And then the graduates of the CSU system and the UC system tend to work in our community college system. So I think that's really phenomenal. I think to answer your direct question, in terms of what does it cost these days, the cost varies according to the socioeconomic status of the student, because the sticker shock effect is very real. You see the total cost and you think, oh my God, I have to come up with these $32,000, $35,000, $36,000 at once, and that's simply not true. So there's a lot of education that goes into the communities to make sure that they know that it's according to their, if they're an independent student or if they're they're part of a family, whatever the socioeconomic status of the family is, then the net cost is what they are responsible for. Because many of our students are eligible for grants, scholarships, and loans, and they could decide whether they want to take out loans, work, or simply not use that money and find other ways of financing themselves.
What about SF State?
Well, I haven't been a student for a while, so I might defer to Tatiana. But before we get to that, I'd like to echo that, you know, even though it is expensive, you know, in the state of California, we have done a lot to making sure that we have access. You know, the CSU is the cheapest if you, you know, comparing to other educations. We've now moved to making city colleges free so you can have a clear access to the UC if you wanted to. So even though it is expensive, I think it's a lot of, again, about the education. Understanding what's out there for you. I was meeting with some financial aid people the other day and just trying to figure out CalFresh and how other ways we can get access to students. And I was told very clearly that during this lovely Trump era, if our students who get a financial aid packet, and with financial aid you have the grants, you have other things, but you also get a work study request. If for any reason you say no to that work study, whether you didn't know what it was or not, and now that, as I call it, the Trump era, it is seen as you have denied work. So they're now not giving you access or telling you you can get EPT, which is a huge issue for me. We have now created a farmer's market on our campus, 15 years old now, that is accepting EPT. So we're trying to, you know, make sure students can get, you know, nutritional food. You know, as we've been on this, as my one of my students stated, students knew they were hungry before you named it food insecurity. And so we have been, you know, at the forefront of this for a while. You know, we created an all organic farmers market about 15 years ago on our campus. We're now moving into pantries and other things. But back to your question, how much is it? I let Tatiana answer that.
I mean, I just graduated from SF State this May, so
it was, congratulations.
Thank you. It was an awesome experience. But, you know, as Ruben said, it just depends on, you know, your financial background. You know, are you in state? Are you out of state coming to San Francisco State University, wanting the California experience, you know? Also, again, with that, it's are you living on campus? Are you living in the city because you can't afford on campus because it's so detrimentally expensive? I know living off campus, you're paying roughly $300 to $3,500 for a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment. You know, it's detrimentally expensive here in San Francisco. But, you know, with financial aid, with jobs, side jobs, you're hustling as a student. You're working probably 2 to 3 part-time jobs just trying to, you know, pay for food or have that little luxury of spending. So it's, as a student, it can be hard, you know, trying to multitask that, but it can be very expensive in San Francisco, at least.
Yeah. I have some numbers here if you want. Just because I know we didn't give you like dollar signs. So folks that want to know a dollar sign. So when you think about mandatory tuition and fee charges, right? Whereas in 2011, we were at 13,190, and that's for the UC system-wide average. That's all 9 UC undergraduate campuses. Today, by 2017, we're at 13,945. So there is also the education that needs to go to the community, because we think that things are just like going all over the place. And it's good just to have the data in front of us. Mm-hmm. I think something that is very important for us to recognize is the fact that the largest debt burden for college students today, and has been for a significant amount of time, I don't want to say always, because then I get in trouble with people. And also my first language is Spanish, and we're very expressive. So you're like, you're very passionate, and you're like, actually, that's not statistically correct. I'm always getting in trouble for being a little bit too colorful with my language. So I want to give you the specifics. The largest debt burden for college students is not tuition and fees. It's their cost of living.
That's right.
It's the rent. It's the utilities. Mm-hmm. It's the food. It's the transportation. It's the clothes, so on and so forth. When you look at the difference in cost, if you're living on campus, you're paying on average in the UC system $35,000 total, right? That is everything. That is you're paying for your room and board, your tuition and your fees, and you should have enough money to buy for your books and everything else. Mm-hmm. If you live off campus, it's $31,410. And that means that you're finding yourself your own apartment and you're figuring things out. This is what we package for you. And then you decide what you're going to do with that money. And then we have the students who are commuters who technically aren't paying as much rent, and therefore they don't need as much in their package because they're saying, I'm actually sharing a space with my family or the people that I call my family, and we're sharing the cost, which lowers my cost of living, and therefore I only need $26,000. Those are the numbers of today. Mm-hmm. Whether students choose to max out their loans, that's their choice. Because students are said, this is what we are estimating, and formed by the costs that we collect in the cost of attendance survey, you choose what you use, how much of that money you use. On average, we're seeing students use about 60% of their loans. And that's the lowest income students use on average 60% of their loans, which means that they work the other time. Or, unfortunately, some of them are just sacrificing the quality of life that they are experiencing so they can drive their costs to the lowest level as possible because they don't want to graduate with high debt margins. Now, on the UC side, and I'm curious about our CSU family, but we're also very lucky in the UC because the UC is ranked nationally as one of the lowest debt by graduation university systems. So you're coming into the UC and the financial aid package that we're providing is making sure that students aren't graduating at the highest debt margins. But I'm also mindful that as a student who also went to the UC system, and even me having a full ride scholarship, which was a Regents and Chancellor scholarship, I still graduated with debt, and I couldn't understand that. I was like, what do you mean you're giving me a full ride scholarship, but the scholarship doesn't help me in the summer? And the summer is when my parents have the least amount of income, so I have to work and borrow to support myself and support family back home. Yeah. And that's something that I like to lift a lot, that oftentimes we like to speak negatively of students and their families when the student has some kind of financial responsibility with them. Some of us had to grow up working. Right. Some of us have been working since like middle school, high school, contributing what you could, mowing lawns, washing cars until you got a legal job, you know, and you contribute to the family. And that's how your family was able to make ends meet and make it through. But then we expect that student who has been contributed to the family to go to college and not contribute, which is the antithesis of you growing up. You get more responsibilities as you grow up. You're going to college so that you can improve your quality of life and that of your loved ones and your family. So all of that comes into this conversation, and that's why we are now saying we have to do this intentionally. We can't continue to just throw students out there and having them individually figure it out mm-hmm. when the economy has moved away from the college student.
Correct.
When you look at the federal aid, we're at a four-decade purchasing power low of the federal Pell Grant. Today's students that get the Pell Grant have the least return in that support compared to the generation of college students that went to college 40 years ago. And we don't talk about that. The generation that went to school back then says, how come all these students are struggling? I went to college and I had the Pell Grant and I worked my way through college and I graduated with no debt. Well, the federal financial aid isn't the same. The state financial aid isn't the same, but most importantly, the cost of living isn't the same.
No, not at all.
And the wages aren't the same. Yeah. So what you used to pay for rent to what people are paying for rent now is sometimes 500 to 600% more just in the rent. When you multiply it times everything else in your cost of living, it's a completely different economic experience.
And we haven't even started talking about food yet, you know, because that's usually the last thing on the totem pole. Yeah. You know, when you have this list of priorities, unfortunately, it's the food that is the last one that, you know, is on there and it gets cut out. And as we know, it's miserable to try to think on an empty stomach or on a sour stomach, you know, me being lactose intolerant. You know, you also got to know what you can eat. And what you can eat, being educated about that. So, you know, for us, and I think Tati was looking at some stats for the CSU.
For CSU, at least living on campus, we're looking to roughly $8,000 to $15,000.
That's to share a room.
That's just to
share a room.
But that's not, you know, including off campus.
That's
you know, you're living in the city. Transportation, public transit, you know, that all those little things take into cost, and it starts adding up eventually.
And I remember just moving here in 95, finding a $3 burrito was so easy back then. It's hard to find that now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So can we talk about what we mean by hunger? Because there's so many different layers of this, whether it's skipping a meal, eating non-nutritious food.
Which is the biggest one.
Right. Not eating at all. Can we talk about the different layers?
Let me share a little bit about the research here, because many times, there go being passionate language again. I was going to say all the time. No.
That's all right.
Many
we
times.
We like your colorful language.
Yeah. Many times folks, when they hear the data that I'm about to share, have a very visceral reaction. What do you mean all of those students are struggling? Or like, how are you defining hunger? And where is this data coming from?
Yes.
It's coming from the USDA. It's a six-item metric instrument that we use so that we're able to say, what is the landscape of food insecurity for college students and how does it compare to the national average? The challenge is that nationally we talk about it in terms of households.
Right.
Whereas when you become a college student, you're not a household anymore. You're functioning as an independent individual through your trajectory of the university. Many times people think that, oh, when you go to college, you put your money together and you buy groceries together and you cook together. I'm like, if you're a hustler, if you grew up being taught how to do that, absolutely. But that's not the overwhelming majority of the students. And you're also assuming that this person is living somewhere, that they have people living with them, that they have a place to prep and cook, and that they have the resources, the time, and the training to do all of that. There's a lot of assumptions that go into that when we try to minimize the data that I'm about to share. So the questions that we ask from the USDA instrument are, the food that I bought just didn't last, and I didn't have money to get more. So you say never true all the way to always true.
Okay.
And then you say couldn't afford to eat balanced meals, to your point of nutrition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Cut the size of your meals or skip meals. Eat less than you felt you should. Hungry but did not eat. And had to cut the size of the meal because of cost. You have to answer across those different scenarios. And then depending on your never true to always true, then you drive how many students are very low food secure. I mean, these are folks who are experiencing hunger.
Right.
These are folks that are not malnourished. They are hungry as they are skipping meals and they have no money to feed themselves. And then there is the folks who are low food secure, meaning that they are predominantly malnourished.
Right.
They go hungry, but it's an exceptional experience. So the UC data is that the UC-wide community, when you think about all of the universities, 24% of the students are experiencing very low levels, and 19% are experiencing low food security in the context of UC Berkeley, just to bring it home to folks of like, what does it look like in the Bay Area? Because I know you asked us about Bay Area data. That's Berkeley. When you think about the UC system-wide, the data changes slightly, but not very much. It's 27% very low food security and 20% low food security when you put all 10 universities. So one more time, at Berkeley alone, 24% of the students are very low food secure. And 20% of the students are low food secure. Whereas system-wide, very low is 27% and low is 20%. What does that say? We have more students in severe circumstances than we have in the malnourished circumstance. Why is that happening? It's not surprising when the UC system is being consistently asked by the communities and the state legislature, and also, frankly, just from the community that's part of the university, we need to be more reflective of the state that we are a part of. The state of California has the number one poverty rate in the country. Mm. When we ask our public universities to be reflective of the public, and the public is experiencing severe economic challenges, they come to the university. That doesn't all of a sudden solve all of the economic challenges, food challenges, and housing challenge of that individual. It just puts you in a new context where you have to navigate, negotiate, and operate with those challenges. Mm-hmm. So we have all of our negative income students, no-income students, low-income students, working-class students, and middle-class students, who all of them are impacted by this. The assumption that it's only the lowest income and negative income students struggling is simply not true.
It's not true at all.
When you look at our pantries, when you look at our interventions, working class students and middle class students are showing up, especially the middle income students who have siblings in college at the same time. You can be middle class until your son, daughter, however they choose to identify in the beautiful landscape of gender performance and identities, show up as a college student, and then you have the first set of bills. And then congratulations, family, now you have the middle child. And then congratulations, now the baby is now a freshman also in college. Now you got three that you have to figure out. How are we as a middle-income family going to support three college students with a $120,000, $130,000 total family income?
If you're lucky.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Ruben Canedo, chair of the UC Berkeley Basic Needs Committee and co-chair of the UC-wide Food and Basic Needs Initiative, to discuss hunger on college campuses. We're also joined by Horace Montgomery, executive director of Associated Students, a nonprofit-led student association group at SF San Francisco State, and Tatiana Ramos is an assistant at the Associated Students nonprofit-led student group at SF State. And she just graduated from San Francisco State. And on today's Your Call, as students prepare to go back to college, we're talking about college hunger and what we need to do to address this growing crisis. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about hunger on college campuses across the country. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a story to share, if you work on a college campus and you have seen college hunger. And the other question we're going to ask is, how can we really tackle this issue? Right now, we're talking about California. This is happening across the country. But politicians love to say that California is the fifth or sixth biggest economy in the world. And yet we have so much hunger on college campuses in this state. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Ruben Canedo, chair of the UC Berkeley Basic Needs Committee, Horace Montgomery, executive director of Associated Students at SF State. Tatiana Ramos is assistant at Associated Students, and she just graduated from San Francisco State. So we have the numbers. We talked about the different levels of hunger. Can you give us stories, for example, Horace? What are you hearing from students at San Francisco State on this particular issue?
First, I'll throw out a couple numbers so we can get the sense of the UC to the state. I worry whether my food would run out before I got more money to buy more. 43% of our students stated that they felt like that was an issue for them. 35% couldn't afford a balanced meal. And for us, that's really what we're trying to focus on, partnering up with the SF Marin Food Bank. Mm-hmm. Our big initiative is not only giving you food, but giving you nutritionist food that will actually build something. You know, sure. This notion of salts and giving you the college food of Top Ramen. Mm-hmm. We're trying to really go away from that myth and actually give them nutritional food. So for me, it's the bigger issue is the forgotten few. You know, we have the assumption that the dorm kids have three meals in a cot. You know, they're okay. We have assumption that our athletes are going to be taken care of. But what we find is the students that are doing the most to help these million-dollar corporations, which is a university, find out that they're not being served. So last year, I can say that we provided food for our food bank for about 90% of our track team. A track team that happened to win the state championship last
90%.
Year. 90%. And we keep all this data because everyone who shows up to the bank, we have them fill out a little survey. We ask them about 8 or 9 questions. Do they skip meals? Do they feel like they have enough money to get nutritional meals? Do they feel like, you know, they're going to make it through the week? So if we talk about what we are doing at San Francisco State, which we always pride ourselves along with Berkeley of being the very colorful and first.
That's right.
We started with our farmer's market. Through the farmer's market, the idea was, hey, let's see if we could provide a separate sort of food for students who might not have the ability to come buy something from the farmers market, but can we see if we can subsidize some meals from our vendors, from our farmers? Can I buy a box of 50 pounds of oranges and then separate that and give this out to students who are at need? So we originally targeted some of our groups in our campus, Guardian Scholar, Metro Academy, Trio, folks that already were serving like students that we felt like we could get to. That was our original notion. I'll give a shout out to Phoebe Dye, one of the nurses now, and I believe she works at Medical One. I messed that up, Phoebe, sorry. She was one of our AS presidents that was really pushing, you know, let's see if we can provide another service for our students, our students in need. So through that notion, I happened to get lucky and ran into the food bank, Tina. Mm-hmm. What's Tina's last name?
Tina Fuchs.
Got to get Tina's last
Tina
name.
Tina Fuchs.
From the food bank, who had come and also had a pilot. They wanted to come with a van of food, have a table, and just see if students would come get it. And let's see how many, what was the need. This was about 4 years ago. We fast forward now to present day. We are now on San Francisco State's campus. Every Monday, I am serving around 10,000 pounds of food. Mm-hmm. We're serving 432 folks as of last Monday. And when I say 432 people, I'm really meaning that each bag of food that we give to the student that steps in there is for three students for the week.
Yep.
So each student, because the food bank works on a 1-to-5 ratio because they're about a household.
Yep.
So we tried to lower it a little bit and say 1-to-3 because we assume that, one, we know that you're at San Francisco and you're not by yourself. There is someone else in that household. Mm-hmm. So what we're now doing with them, this is now on our third year, is every Monday you can come in as long as you've signed up to our a pantry, you can come get this food. We've also now learning all of the different chasms that exist because we have all these assumptions. So we continue to find other little pieces where there were some folks that needed this amount of food for the week, but there were others who just needed a snack for the day or they needed something emergency. So we also opened up our emergency snack program, which we call Gator Groceries. So at this moment, presently, we are serving around 432 students on Monday, which then could really stretch out to maybe 1,000 to feed for the week. We're also serving another 300 just quick snacks, little chips, a little like applesauces, that is also starting to reach a different group. I could say maybe of the students that come on Monday, maybe there's a duplication of 100. But then there's a 200 students that I don't see at all on Monday that don't want the Brussels sprouts and the potatoes that are just coming for our little snacks. Mm-hmm. But the biggest issue now that we're finding is a lot of these students don't know what to do with the food. You know, I'm finding that they didn't even know how to open a can with a can opener. You know, so getting Brussels sprouts and potatoes and yams, you know, the providing the education now of what to do with this food,
that's right,
how to prepare this food is now the next step. You know, we have found a way to get the food. We today, I just had a walkthrough, and hopefully the fire marshal was there. We have just built the first that I know of, call me if I'm wrong, permanent pantry on a CSU campus with about 300-square-foot refrigerated unit. That will be opening at San Francisco State on August 26th, and we're going to try to then augment another portion of food insecurity, trying to complete the full meal. You know, I'm giving you potatoes, I'm giving you, but what I wasn't able to give you is protein because I had no cold storage. Now we'll be able to complete that circle. So you can come get your fresh fruits, but you can also come get your starches, and you can also can get protein. You can get some eggs. You can get some chicken. We've also now opened up a shop account with the food bank where we can actually go in there and buy food at an enormously cheap price to serve our students. So I have said it a couple times, and I'm about to say it out loud on the radio. Food insecurity will be gone on San Francisco State.
Let's go.
We will get rid of it on that campus. I can't do anything else, but each one teach one, and mine is San Francisco State, and I will make sure that will be a place where you will not be hungry.
Wow. That's beautiful. Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about just how this affects students?
Oh, yeah.
To be hungry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There was a symposium on food insecurity at this year's American Psychological Association convention. The Boston Globe wrote about it.
Yep.
And Yu-Wei Wang, who's a research director at the University of Maryland Counseling Center, said, quote, "Students who we interviewed have told us that because of malnutrition, they got so depressed that they were hospitalized. Sometimes they are so hungry, they cannot focus on school."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%. I know that I wish I had pulled it on me, but we had an interview, a request from the food bank to just see if we can get some testimonials from some of our students so they can kind of share, you know, how important this was to them, you know, how this really impacted them. To me, it's a matter of one less stressor. You know, as you see these lovely gray hairs on my head, you know, the school is a stressful situation, you know, being on your own, you know, dealing with relationships, dealing with all these uncontrollable situations. It really is the last thing you think about is your food, mm-hmm. but it affects you so much. It affects mm-hmm. how you think, you know, how you deal with stress, how you deal with, you know, joy. You know, it's from someone who is a big foodie, as we say, if I have a sour stomach or, you know, if I'm hungry, I can see my mood changes. You know, I don't have as much energy. I don't have mm-hmm. as much want to do any damn thing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's what could be more important than what we need to do every day? You know, it's kind of ridiculous that we even ask the question.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you can't not eat.
Yeah. I can share with folks a little bit of just more data to add color to that conversation. So I think the emotional health and wellness conversation is absolutely essential. And for some reason, historically up to today, there's been a really powerful movement, and rightly so, to make sure that we are prioritizing the health, the wellness, and the well-being of children. There's an abundance of research on how essential nutrition is, which is why we created one of the most large-scale free and reduced lunch programs in the world, right? Where now they have an opportunity to ask themselves the questions that we've been asking about children for college students, because those children become middle schoolers, become high school students, and they've always had that free and reduced lunch program available
to
them.
That's right.
Yet they get into college and we assume that the financial aid package, even though we know it's at a purchasing power low and it is not keeping up with cost of living, is supposed to replace the support that all of those students grew up having if they grew up in the public system of the United States.
That's a great point.
And that just gets missed. That's why our folks from the Hope Center have been having that conversation, and so have CLASP and the UC system and so many of us saying, we already know the relationship between nutrition and your health, well-being, and ability to perform. We just have not amplified the conversation to continue for the college experience. Now we're starting to have more research link beyond just nutrition into mental emotional health because of what's happening. You know, our researcher from UC San Francisco, Susana Martinez, published a study on the data sets that I spoke to you all about from the UC system, and looked at it from how did those same students respond to the mental emotional health instrument, because we have both of those. And there is a relationship between the students that, as you see, students that have higher rates of hunger, malnourishment, also have higher rates of stress and anxiety, mm-hmm. Self-harm, so on and so forth.
Right.
So there's a direct relationship there that we need to invite our research community to contribute to it so that we can amplify that conversation. And what we haven't talked about right now is, how does this impact performance? GPA,
yes,
which
right.
is a lot of folks are like, yo, you hungry? You're hungry. Figure it out, right? It's like a rite of passage. So many of us have been hungry. You figure some life skills and actually makes you a better human being. I've been told that more times than I have been asked, how can I help? Which is really fascinating. But in terms of the GPA, let's say that you don't really care about the nutrition and the well-being and the emotional health of human beings. Okay. But you might care about the GPA performance, because eventually these college students become your public servants, become your sector professionals, become the leaders and the shapers of your local to state to national context. And you want to make sure that they're performing to the best of their abilities. Well, for students that are experiencing full security, meaning you have food and you have housing, they, in their first year, second year, third year, and fourth year of the university, perform at the highest rates of that GPA. Compared to the students that are experiencing both food insecurity and homelessness, mm-hmm. perform at the lowest levels. One of the most disheartening thing is that students that are in that particular circumstance, the students that are experiencing hunger and homelessness, do not get to a 3.0 GPA until their last year in the university.
Wow.
The heartbreaking aspect of that is that many of the jobs on and off campus – many of the fellowships, many of the opportunities that employ you and give you the income to be able to feed yourself, to be able to pay for your housing, require a 3.0 GPA. So then we have to look at this not just from the experience of the student, but also what is the policy, what is the infrastructure, and what is the culture that all of this is operating, because it's essential that we make the transformative changes in each one of those levels, which I think I love the shout out that we're giving to our food banks right now in our county, because the food banks have been our front line of defense for many generations. And they've believed in this work and have committed from this work from day one. I cannot speak in higher regard about the Alameda County Community Food Bank. I mean, those folks are warriors, they're healers, they're innovators, they're super champions of the community. Obviously, we're on that side of the bay. But they've been serving 1 in 5 people in Alameda County. We know that college students have lived in Alameda County. So when we showed up, we're like, hey, we need help. They were like, yeah, we know. We've been helping them. They just haven't been getting the help on campus, but they go to our city pantries. They come to our county food bank. And it's been an intimate relationship and partnership from day one, to the point that now they're not just helping with the food pantry. We're also their largest provider of CalFresh in the county.
That's impressive.
Our work for CalFresh at UC Berkeley has now reached over 1,300 unique students per year. And when you look at what CalFresh does, it's much more transformative than a food pantry experience.
Yes.
You come to the pantry, you get the food, you're probably going to come back. Yeah. You come in for CalFresh, you get up to $192 per month in your EBT card. If you have dependents, for you and your dependents, now you can go buy the groceries that you want for your nutritional needs, your cultural preferences of foods, and the accessibility of all of the different grocery stores and markets that have EBT. That's where we need to go. Also, because the state of California ranks 48th in SNAP dollar utilization across the country. SNAP is nationally CalFresh in California. Right. We rebranded so that,
that
I don't
just
know,
food
California is what California does. But the notion that people are playing the system or gaming the system, it's so wrong and out of the conversation. We need to increase those dollars coming to our state. The local economy needs it. The community is going to benefit from it. And there's a huge opportunity for us to intervene sustainably.
And take the politics out of it, you know, and be about caring and fixing instead of, ooh, what's right, who's wrong, or who's gaming the system, as you stated. Tina Gonzalez, we'll give that shout out to SF Marin Food Bank and just the state. As my colleague said, we couldn't do it without the food bank. We really couldn't. They have been phenomenal, and they've just now announced that they are now pushing their own college pantries that they're trying to go out and enforce and make sure they're supporting. Because, again, and I'll continue to echo it, this is just one of those forgotten folk.
Yep.
You know, we just assume that everything is taken care of. I love your analogy about, or the timeline of having that support all the way through until you get to college, and just assume, oh, it's fine. And it's also that assumption of thinking that you were learning how to provide for yourself.
That's right, the skills
time.
Development.
And it's not happening.
Yeah.
You know, we just assume these things are being developed, and then when we get there, we're like, oh, why didn't you know that?
Yeah.
Why didn't you learn how to ride a bike? Well, you never taught me. There was never, you know, there was never this chance to do it.
That's a really good point, because we want students to be able to take care of themselves. And when we ask folks, well, who's teaching the students, right? Like when you look at the elementary curriculum, middle school curriculum, high school curriculum, we're not teaching life skills anymore, right? We're not teaching personal finance, grocery shopping, meal prepping, cooking, searching for housing, advocating for yourself. But I know I'm going to get in trouble if I don't say this. I do want to make sure that folks know that if folks want to get involved, they can go to accfb.org and they can involve with our county food bank. And if they want to get involved with our UC Berkeley efforts, they can go to basicneeds.berkeley.edu.
We have about 5 minutes left. Can we spend the last part of the show really talking about big changes that we need to see?
Sure.
Because I think it's fantastic that these food banks are doing such good work. But again, we live in a very wealthy part of the country. I mean, this is one of the wealthiest parts of the country, and it's incredible that there's just so much need. And so, Tatiana, what are your thoughts about bigger changes that we need? I mean, I was just reading Senator Elizabeth Warren has a plan that would increase the number of college students who could receive SNAP benefits. Mm-hmm. It would increase outreach. It would create a SNAP student hunger pilot program and then increase awareness. So that's great. What other major changes would you like to see? I'm thinking about the Bernie Sanders plan for free college tuition, for example.
Yeah,
can we
absolutely.
Talk about some bigger solutions here?
Honestly, I know, with the college tuition, that's the main priority for any student, any young adult, any adult wanting to go back to school. That's honestly the most important part of how are you going to live off, how are you going to excel in your work performance or your future in that case. But for students, being a used to be a student, I know there was a lot of stigma. There's that idea that I don't want to go to a food bank because it's not, the trend, or why I don't need that. I have a couple bucks for some snacks. I can make that last. I could stretch it, I know for students, once finals come, at least for my friends, we used to potluck it and everybody brings a certain snack. We'll grub off that while studying and making our brains bleed till that final. But definitely with the Bernie Sanders, free tuition. Who wouldn't want free tuition? Of course, that would, let alone take off 60% of your stress.
Right.
And for students being, not having that support system from their parents, being single parents, siblings in that matter, you're an adult. You're being thrown into a pool and you can't swim. You're barely trying to float.
So what do you all think of this debate around free college tuition? And it's knocked down very quickly when people say, well, we can't do that because then the wealthy or the high middle class will also have free college tuition. And it's boom, debate over. Given that you dedicate a lot of your time mm-hmm. to ensuring that students have nutritious food, what do you all think about this debate around education that would go from kindergarten through a four-year college?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a couple ways to build something, right? We have this notion of let's wait until it's a mansion before we build it, or we build it as we go. And so I'm just going to be honest. I think that, CSU and UC having free tuition is a pipe dream at this moment. But I'm sure folks said that about having free City College and now it exists, mm-hmm. right? But to me, it's also about that microcosm and the macro and the micro, right? If we can solve some things now, that you can get behind. Now this is my politician coming in, right? If you know that the vote you're going to lose, then let's find a vote we could win. So if I can't get free tuition right now, can you give me some free food? Can you stop folks from doing this little notion where if I don't ask for work study, I don't need some food? How about work study for everyone?
Can you tell us how work study
is an addition to your Pell Grant. So once you get your Pell Grant, which they'll in California, they'll look and see what the estimation of housing is, what your books are, what tuition is, and then you get a lump sum of money that has been calculated by kind of what my partner was saying about, the UC's tuition. After that's done, you then have an access to work study, which is about $2,000 to $2,500 that you would then go work at the campus and you would get the money. So you wouldn't be paid per hour, but this would be money that would be calculated out through your financial aid. If you say yes to that because of now our political climate, that is you saying yes to work. Mm-hmm. And that is you saying, oh, well, I'm not one of these lazy folks who just wants to live off the state. I want to actually work. When most students don't see it in that way, it's brought to you as a financial aid packet. Mm-hmm. It is not brought to you as some work aid. Mm-hmm. So a lot of folks, when you're just checking those boxes, don't know that. But because of that small little federal little political push now, they're saying, well, if you said you don't want to work, then why would I give you any, as they say, the lazy food stamp folks? Yeah. And so to me, just that little thing alone, gets a lot of folks out of the eligibility of CalFresh. And when CalFresh to me is the big difference is, Tati was trying to talk about this notion of embarrassment. For me, CalFresh empowers you to go spend your money on what you want. You know, I talk about this in our pantry all the time. Just because they're coming here asking for something doesn't mean they shouldn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Don't just be sending them some spam. I want that good too. Mm-hmm. You know, sorry. But give them the choice to be a human being, mm-hmm. not just, dignity. Oh, you're in need. You know, there's got to be some dignity, you know, into it. So.
Right. I think we have about a minute left.
Yeah, I like that question. So in 1 minute, but what my offerings would be is I want to remind folks that tuition is not the largest debt burden to college students. So to talk about a tuition-free college, you're not talking about what drives the largest debt in the economy of the college students. We need to figure out what's a strategy that's going to be equitable according to socioeconomic status of the individual and that it's going to be debt-free driven. Mm-hmm. Debt is the problem, not the tuition and the fees. And we need to figure out how do we make that the cultural conversation. Mm-hmm. Second, when it comes to food, we need to create a free and reduced lunch program for higher education and amplify CalFresh across the baseline. And then you take care of everybody on top of that. Because right now there's people in crisis. You start at the crisis and you make better the environment for everybody else.
That's right.
The third thing is housing. We need to make housing affordable and equitable in the community without creating this hierarchy of human value where we put college students over everybody else. Because I also don't believe that that is true, honest, or just. But housing has to be a conversation that we are a lot more committed to because housing drives the economic struggles for everybody else. Once we become a interdependent and cultural shifting effort, that's when we start making the big change happen.
So this, we're talking about changes at the local, state, and national
Absolutely.
Levels.
Absolutely. The whole ecosystem. Look,
right.
People don't fail. Their environments fail them.
Right.
The environment right now isn't allowing people to be healthy, successful, and sustainable.
Well, since Senator Warren introduced this bill, it would be nice if a question around this issue would be asked at the upcoming presidential debates.
Be nice.
I mean, mm-hmm. more talk about poverty and people struggling to make ends meet in one of the wealthiest states in the country.
Let's do an economic justice presidential debate.
Yeah.
And everybody come with your economic justice agenda. And then we can vote who should be there.
They'll be hosting that at Berkeley, I'm sure.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us and your important work. Ruben Canedo is chair of the UC Berkeley Basic Needs Committee. Horace Montgomery is executive director of Associated Students at SF State. Tatiana Ramos is assistant at Associated Students at SF State and a recent graduate. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And if people want to get involved, what's the best thing they can do, just quickly?
You can actually volunteer at our ASI homepage. We have a tab, and we are welcoming everybody and all to help out with the food bank and our Gator grocery. So please stop by. Don't. Yeah.
And then you can go to Berkeley, basicneeds.berkeley.edu or accfb.org to get involved with our county food bank.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.